This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the month, September, when financial life as we knew it came to an end. Wall Street giant Lehman Brothers went bust on 9/15. All year here on Marketplace, we've been looking at the great financial crisis 10 years on, divided decade, we call it. Loads of global capital searching for a home, subprime home loans, complex financial derivatives. Well, one effect, home ownership in America is down 5% from its pre-crisis high. The McKinsey Global Institute has a new report on what has changed and what hasn't. One of the authors is McKinsey partner Susan Lund. Ms. Lund, thanks for coming in here.
My pleasure.
So a decade after the big mess, what hasn't changed? I mean, one thing is that home ownership has fallen from that high back in 2005 of 69% down to 64%. But beyond that, how are the banks these days?
Well, the banks are much more stable. The new regulations passed in Europe and in the U.S. have meant that banks have to hold more capital against their loans. And this means that they can have losses in the future and afford to withstand that. So they are much more capitalized. They need to hold more liquid assets, so we aren't going to have a liquidity crunch like we saw after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. But with all this capital, they're still struggling to find profitable new business models.
All right. So perhaps they're less vulnerable to needing a sudden bailout like last time, but less profitable. Is that just because of Dodd-Frank and other regulations?
Well, it is. When you look at the return on equity, which is a common metric that investors in the market would use and others, what you see is that it's fallen by about half for banks in Europe and the U.S. compared to what it was pre-crisis. Now, some of that is good news because they were doing things like trading on their own behalf that was profitable but risky. But it means that they're still trying to find out ways to make money with all this capital they're now holding. And I think banks in the U.S. have actually gone further in restructuring than banks in Europe. But on both sides of the Atlantic, I think they're looking for what's the next big opportunity.
So the post-crisis regulations are a big part of this, as you say. But I mean, it's other things too, right? I mean, we've had low interest rates. It's often hard for banks to make lots of money in the lower interest rate environments.
Absolutely. We've seen lower interest rates. We've seen less lending, which some people blame the banks. But the banks would say, look, nobody wants to borrow, especially companies building factories and doing other big capital investments, because we've also, of course, had a very weak recovery and subpar economic growth. So there hasn't been a lot of demand for people to take on debt. As you mentioned in the beginning, households have kind of curbed their appetite for debt. For all the households who borrowed too much prior to 2007 and 8, they've now had to pay down debt. So there have been less opportunities on the lending side.
Now, in your report, you also invite us not to just fight the last war, but to look ahead. Tell me about some new risks that are on your radar.
Well, I think there are two classes of risks that we think about. One are what we would think about as the known risks, and that's debt. So despite this massive global financial crisis in 2008. Since that time, instead of staying flat or falling, global debt has continued to grow by a whopping $72 trillion. And it's different borrowers this time. It's companies and it's governments. And so we know that there are risks of a debt crisis, just given the sheer volume and speed of growth in some countries. So as we're having this conversation, we know that Argentina has asked the IMF for a bailout and to accelerate it because of government debt combined with a weakening currency. In Turkey, currency is also under attack. And in Turkey, it's more of a corporate debt issue than a government debt issue. So we know that there could be crises related to countries that have borrowed a lot in this era of very low interest rates.
And the second kind of risk?
The second kind of risk, what we call the unknown unknowns. And in my mind, this is largely related to how new technologies will affect the markets. So for instance, we see Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. We see the use of artificial intelligence driving trading algorithms and personal investment decisions. And all of this will create different dynamics in the marketplace. So in stock markets and in bond markets and currency markets, we've already seen a couple instances of what we call a flash crash due to high-speed, you know, computer-driven trading. But we could see much more of that, and we could see asset prices start to change in relationship to each other in new ways. We don't know how that's going to play out, but the whole use of high-speed computer and artificial intelligence-driven type trading in markets, I think, is one big area of question mark.
And a related one would be the vulnerability to cyber attack.
We've already seen hacks. Like a few years ago, the cyber attack on the Central Bank of Bangladesh, where the attackers were trying to steal hundreds of millions of dollars using SWIFT, which is the big payments backbone that connects all the world's central banks. It's supposed to be the most secure thing ever. And yet, by getting an employee's password at the Bank of Bangladesh, attackers were able to withdraw over $100 million. Now, some of that was recovered, but I think it really illustrates the vulnerability we have as we go towards more and more digital and electronic forms of trading.
Your report highlights what I think is an irony. I mean, many of us take it as an article of faith that the world keeps getting more interconnected. That is the way that the arc of history bends. But you're saying that since the financial collapse in these 10 years, to some extent, we're less connected?
We are definitely less interconnected in financial markets. And that's good news for stability, because it means that problems we may see in Turkey or Argentina are not likely to cause major damage to other banks around the world. There will be some damage, but it won't be like the ripple effect we saw in 2008. And that's good news. So, and banks are focusing more on domestic markets. So cross-border bank lending is down very sharply since the crisis. If anything, maybe the global financial system got too interconnected. And that is what allowed a crisis that began really in just some small corner of the U.S. mortgage market to ripple out and have worldwide ramifications.
And take down entire countries. I'm thinking of Ireland, but there are many other examples.
That's right. Spain, and then the Euro crisis, and Greece. And it has been truly a decade of recovery.
Susan Lund is a partner at the McKinsey Global Institute. The report is called A Decade After the Global Financial Crisis, What Has and Has Not Changed. Susan, thank you.
Thank you.